like not knowing where Warren is. Or what he's doing. Morgan's phone rang in her hand. It's Stella. She answered the call. Stella sounded rushed. I just got off the phone with the Redhaven police. Redhaven was a small town about 15 miles from Scarlet Falls. They arrested Tyler Green yesterday around noon for violating a restraining order against his ex. Morgan froze. Did you say noon? Yes. Stella's voice darkened. Tyler Green didn't send you that package yesterday. A nasty wind nipped at Morgan's exposed face. Shit. You be careful, Stella said. I will. Morgan ended the call. A chill slid through her bones as she fastened the top button of her coat. Did you hear, Stella? Lance's face was set.
Yes.
Morgan shoved her hands into her coat pockets. If Tyler isn't my stalker, then who is?
I can think of one other person who is both angry and petty.
Lance crossed his arms. A scene in the courthouse popped into her mind. Morgan hunched against the wind. Esposito?
He tried to bully you,
Sharp said. He had. But he's the ADA. Morgan had a hard time believing the new prosecutor would be that angry she'd outmaneuvered him.
He looks like the type who doesn't like to lose,
Lance pointed out. Sharp added,
he didn't care about guilt or innocence, only about winning his case.
He's a good candidate, Morgan agreed.
One more thing. Esposito was handling Tyler's case,
Lance said.
Do you think it's possible he reduced the assault charges against Tyler out of spite? Maybe that was part of a grand plan to harass and intimidate you.
90% of cases are plea bargained. We can't prove Esposito had any motive in letting Tyler out beyond getting the case cleared. But it made perfect sense. Unfortunately, there wasn't anything she could do about it. Criminal charges were at the discretion of the prosecutor's office. Look, we have to put my stalker on the back burner for now. We need to focus on figuring out who's killing people. Chapter 36. If at first you don't succeed, try and try again. But also try harder and try smarter. He pulled the green cap lower on his forehead. His gloved fingers gripped the rolling trash can as he pushed it from room to room. He kept his chin down and made sure the security badge hanging from his belt loop faced backward. He looked nothing like the Hispanic janitor whose ID he'd stolen. With his attention on his task, his face was turned away from the surveillance cameras overhead. The hallways were quiet. No one even glanced at him. Cleaning staff was practically invisible. The nurse covering Jenny Krueger's room and the one next to it was behind the counter talking on the landline. He walked past Jenny Krueger's room. The blonde was still there. Didn't she need to sleep at some point? He wasn't getting into Jenny's room. He needed another plan. He spied a supply cart parked just outside her door. A label on the front of the cart was marked with Jenny's room number. And on top rested two large IV bags. Saline, he guessed from the size and the fact that they were out in the open. Medication was kept under lock and key. If he could just get to the front of Jenny's room without anyone noticing him, he could slip the heroin into her saline. The extra time it would take for the drug to enter her system would give him the opportunity to slip away before any alarms were raised. The old man still occupied the next room. He went to the bedside. Slipping a syringe number one from his pocket, he slid it into the IV port and pushed the plunger. He was no medical professional, but an air bubble was the least of this old man's problems. A few seconds later, he dumped the old man's trash in his rolling can and left the room with unhurried strides. Mindful of the security cameras, he adjusted his posture accordingly to keep his face averted. He'd worn some padding under the baggy coveralls to disguise his body shape. No one gave him a second glance as he moved from room to room. He was three rooms down the hall when alarm sounded. A minute later, a code blue blared over the speaker. Footsteps rushed. He poked his head into the hallway to find that everyone else was doing the same.
scrub-clad bodies crowded the old man's room, including the shared nurse. Staff hustled in and out of the room. Even the staff not involved with the code gravitated to the drama. He moved closer, stopping just before Jenny Krueger's doorway to stand behind two short nurses. From here, he could see over their heads into the old man's room. Someone climbed onto the bed to deliver chest compressions. Another readied a defibrillator. Injections were given. A man in blue scrubs watched the monitors and shouted orders. Well-organized chaos ensued. The crowd's mood shifted as efforts to revive the old man failed. He glanced at the supply cart by Jenny's door. The bags of IV saline still sat on the top shelf. Keeping his hands low, he eased sideways, pulled a second syringe from his pocket and injected it into the self-healing orange part on the bag. Because the heroin would be diluted, he added another shot. That should do it. On top of everything else in Jennifer Krueger's body, that should stop her heart. People began to drift away from the old man's room, disappointment emanating from their postures and gestures. He backed away from the cart and retreated down the hall before the rest of the crowd dissipated. He pushed his trash can to the end of the hall and abandoned it in a utility room before hitting the silver square on the wall and exiting the ICU. The timing was a bit tricky. He didn't know when the saline would be administered or how long it would take to drip into Jenny Krueger's veins. But it didn't matter. Before the night was over, Jenny would be dead. Chapter 37. Morgan warmed her hands in front of the dashboard heat vents. The temperature was dropping as the light waned. Lance followed directions to a small brick apartment building not far from the Gray's Hollow train station. The building was divided into 8 apartments, 4 up and 4 down. Warren lived in a downstairs end unit. Morgan and Lance got out of the Jeep, crossed the sidewalk, and walked up the concrete path. Lance knocked on his front door. No one answered. Morgan wasn't surprised. Turning, she scanned the parking area in front of the building. I don't see his truck. Even if Warren were home, would he answer the door to them? Stepping into the grass, Morgan cupped her hand over her eyes and tried to peer through the front window.
See anything?
Lance asked. No, the curtains are drawn. She stepped back onto the path. Lance walked around the unit, but blinds covered the windows. At the front window, he angled off and tried to look through the half-inch gap between the curtains.
Can't see anything.
A middle-aged man wearing blue coveralls came out of the apartment next door. Frowning, he raised a suspicious eyebrow at Lance. Hello. Morgan walked toward him, smiling while trying to look innocent. The man didn't look convinced.
Can I help you?
Morgan turned up the wattage of her smile and reached into her pocket for a business card. We're looking for Warren Fox.
We're private investigators.
Lance put a hand on her arm, keeping it in her pocket.
Warren might have inherited some money. Have you seen him?
Sorry. The neighbor relaxed and shook his head.
I wish I could help, but I haven't seen Warren today. You should try the county recycling center. I don't know what time he gets off, but that's where he works.
Do you know Warren well? Morgan asked.
No.
His curt tone implied that was by choice.
Do you have any idea where else he might be?
Lance asked.
He's gonna want to talk to us.
The neighbor adjusted the zipper of his coveralls.
You could try the Black Tavern. That's his watering hole. You'll have to excuse me. I'll have to get to work.
He turned and walked toward a sedan parked in front of the building. Thank you. Morgan called after him. They went back to the Jeep. You lied to him. Morgan closed your door with more force than necessary. What if he tells the sheriff?
I said might.
Lance clarified.
And that's why we didn't give him a business card or our names.
Morgan sighed. The sheriff will know it was us. This is the kind of behavior that puts you on Sheriff King's bad side.
He's impossible.
Morgan was sure the sheriff felt the same way about Lance. I know you're frustrated, but we have to pick our battles, she said. Like it or not, he is the law. There are some fights we just can't win. It's better to willingly give on some issues,
makes you look cooperative.
I know. You're right, but people are dying.
Frustration sharpened Lance's words.
My mother almost died, and we still have no idea what happened to my father.
Why don't we go see your mother now? Morgan suggested. He consulted the map on his smartphone.
We'll stop at the Black Tavern first. It's just up the road, and the hospital is in the other direction.
He backed away from the curb. The tavern was only a half mile from the apartment. Warren could stumble home blind drunk. Remembering his breath on her face, Morgan thought the location was probably convenient for him. Lance parked and they went inside. Clearly a neighborhood dive, the tavern was small, holding barely a dozen booths and the same number of stools at a worn bar. The air smelled like sour beer and lifelong disappointment. A chalkboard on the wall announced beer on tap was $1 during happy hour. At 5:30, a handful of patrons took advantage of the special. They stared at a hockey game playing on a wall-mounted flat screen. Several slumped, already appearing intoxicated, though happy hour had just begun. Two men on the end of the bar eyeballed Morgan. Lance changed sides, putting his body between her and the men. The gesture was unnecessary but appreciated. They went up to the bar. Grit on the floor crunched under Morgan's feet. Below the short sleeves of his black t-shirt, the bartender sported two full sleeves of tattoos.
What can I get you?
He asked. Morgan leaned across the bar. We're looking for Warren Fox. The bartender barely glanced at her. Lance rested his forearms on the bar. In a low voice, he said,
Warren might have inherited some money.
The bartender scratched a red bump on a tattoo of a robot on his wrist. There were more marks on the insides of his arms. Addict. A friendly smile wasn't going to influence him. Addicts only cared about one thing. Money to buy their next hit. Lance slipped a folded $20 bill from his pocket and set it on the bar. He held a second between his forefingers. That got the bartender's attention. He pocketed the money and gave Lance his full attention.
I'd like to help, but I haven't seen Warren today.
How often does he usually come in?
Lance asked.
Almost every night.
The bartender pointed to the other end of the bar.
He's usually on that stool by 4:30.
Warren hadn't been at work and he wasn't at his usual hangout. Was he guilty, in danger, or simply drunk somewhere other than the bar?
When was the last time you saw him?
Lance asked.
Come to think of it, Warren wasn't here last night either.
The bartender scratched his belly. His itchiness felt contagious. Morgan eased back a few inches.
Maybe he decided to drink at home.
The bartender shrugged.
Or he could be broke. That slut he was married to was after his paycheck. Maybe she got some of it.
Lance passed the second bill over the bar.
Do you know anywhere else Warren might hang out?
Sorry. The bartender took the cash. As far as I know, he's at work, here, or home.
Thanks.
Lance steered Morgan toward the other patrons, keeping her tucked just slightly behind his left arm. He took another 20 from his pocket.
Does anyone know where Warren Fox might be?
Morgan had little doubt that the other patrons had overheard Lance's conversation with the bartender.
You could try his wife's place.
An old drunk swayed on the closest stool.
He was trying to get back with her. Hated the bitch, but loved her too, if you know what I mean.
Not really.
Anyone have any better information?
Lance waved the folded bill. The other men sighed and turned back to their beers. Lance handed the old man the 20, then steered Morgan out of the bar. The fresh air was cold but welcome. Warren hasn't been in the bar in 2 nights. Morgan reached into her tote and pulled out a small bottle of hand sanitizer. She offered it to him. He shook his head.
You didn't touch anything.
I still feel dirty. She rubbed a spot of gel between her hands. He was right, but the sting of Purell in her nose made her feel cleaner. Nasty place. The bartender's an addict. Lance nodded.
Which is why he gave us info on Warren for $40 without a hint of guilt.
They got into the Jeep.
We should call the sheriff. Morgan smoothed her coat and fastened her seatbelt. Given the history of this investigation, Warren could be dead inside his apartment.
As much as it pains me to admit it, I agree.
Lance said.
You call him.
Morgan sighed and made the call. She covered the speaker with her fingers. No answer. She left a message for him to call her about the case.
That works perfectly. We did our duty and didn't have to deal with the sheriff.
I still feel guilty. Morgan lowered her phone to her thigh. Should we call 911? Lance steered the Jeep onto the on-ramp.
I suppose we can't let ourselves in.
No, definitely not. Morgan made the call, giving the dispatcher her name and asking for a welfare check at Warren Fox's address. They won't rush a welfare check.
If he's dead, an hour or two won't make a difference.
The hospital was a 30-minute drive from the Black Tavern. It was nearly 7 o'clock by the time Lance parked in the lot.
I'm sorry. We should have stopped for food.
I'm fine. Morgan pulled 2 candy bars from her tote and offered him one. He shook his head.
I'm not hungry.
She stashed one back in her bag and ate the other as they walked across the parking lot. They went through the automatic doors, collected visitor badges at the front desk, and took the elevator to the 3rd floor. They walked down the hall toward the ICU. A lab tech was exiting, and they slipped in while the doors were still open. Morgan picked up on a somber energy the minute they walked into the ward. Staff talked in hushed, subdued voices. Lance's steps quickened. He felt it too. Morgan took his hand in a strong grip. Someone had died. Chapter 38. Lance could feel the sorrow, as palpable as a drop in room temperature. They hadn't called him. It can't be Mom. He paused just before he reached his mother's doorway, dread weighing his steps like his boots were filled with concrete. He and his mother had fought her mental illness for decades. Her demons had taken up permanent residence, but every time they'd advanced, she'd rallied and driven them back. Her whole life had been one battle after another. She won some and lost others, but overall, she'd been winning the war. Inch by inch, she'd chipped away at their advantage. She'd finally made real gains, only to fall victim to someone's sick game. As he pushed forward for the 2 last strides, Morgan's grip on his hand tightened. But everything in the room looked the same. His mother slept, the ventilator hissed. The heart monitor beeped in a steady rhythm.
It's not her.
When he exhaled, he was lightheaded for a few seconds. In the chair near the bed, Hannah Barrett looked up from her book. Her face was grim, her eyes sad. Lance glanced into the next room. The sheet had been pulled up over the patient's head. 2 women in scrubs were unplugging equipment and tubes, coiling the untethered ends onto the bed. The old man was dead. Equal amounts of relief and guilt flooded Lance. The old man was someone's father or grandfather. Someone would be brokenhearted at the news. Hand in hand with Morgan, he went into his mother's room. The nurse bustled in and hung a new IV bag. Her eyes and nose were red from crying.
How is she?
Lance asked. She's hanging in there. She sniffed, then gave him an update on her vital signs. Her kidney function showed some improvement today. She flushed the IV port, attached the new bag of fluids, and pressed buttons on the infusion pump. The bed and medical equipment filled one half of the large room. A supply and computer station was built into the other. The wall that edged the hallway was made of glass, with a curtain that could be drawn across if needed. The nurse scanned the monitors, then went to the computer and typed, "Let me know if you need anything." She left the room. Hannah stood and greeted them.
"I can't thank you enough for being here,"
Lance said.
"I don't mind."
Hannah brushed a lock of short, spiky blonde hair off her face.
"Do you have any idea who might have done this to her?" "We have a few solid suspects."
"But not solid enough," thought Lance.
"You've been here all day?"
Hannah nodded. "Brody'll be here soon to relieve me for the evening, and Stella said she'd take the night shift. One of us will be with her, all the time."
"I'm grateful,"
he said. No one can be in two places at once. Hannah moved toward the door. Since you're here, I'm going to stretch my legs and grab a cup of tea. Morgan squeezed his hand. Do you want a few minutes alone with her? Lance nodded. Morgan and Hannah left the room. He went to the bedside and took his mother's hand. Her fingers were freezing. He wrapped his hand around hers to warm it. The doctors thought she would survive, but would she? And if she did, what kind of permanent damage had her body sustained? The nurse seemed satisfied with her progress, but Lance didn't see any improvement. His mother's face was lifeless, her skin colorless, almost blue-tinted. Her lips had no color at all. In fact, she seemed to be fading as he watched. One of the machines beside the bed began to beep. The nurse appeared in the doorway, her mouth turned down as she watched the monitors. An alarm sounded. Lance startled. Sweat broke between his shoulder blades and his stomach flipped over.
What's wrong?
Her heart rate is decreasing, the nurse said. She pressed a button and the blood pressure cuff inflated. A doctor rushed into the room. Heart rate and blood pressure are down. The nurse rattled off numbers and readings. Her vitals were all normal 10 minutes ago. More nurses hurried into the room. Someone nudged Lance out of the way. He stepped sideways toward the doorway.
Fingernails are blue.
The doctor lifted his mother's eyelids with his thumb.
Her pupils are constricted.
He went to the computer and scrolled.
If she wasn't in the ICU, I'd say she's presenting as a new opioid overdose. Her original drug panel came back positive for opioids.
They'd been right.
Someone poisoned her,
Lance said.
This wasn't a suicide attempt.
Could someone have sneaked into the ICU and given his mother a drug?
Was anyone else in this room?
Lance scanned the room, then the doorway. People rushed past. Medical personnel wore IDs. Visitors checked in at the desk in the lobby and received ID badges. But how hard would it be to sneak into the hospital? This was not the city. The community hospital gave excellent care, but they didn't even have metal detectors. But even if someone did manage to get into the ward, Hannah said she'd been with his mother the entire day. That's the whole reason she was here. Had she gone out for coffee or to use the restroom? The doctor shot a look at him.
Are you suggesting someone tried to kill her once?
Lance said.
I don't know how they could have gained access to her here, but this is a busy place.
More medical personnel crowded around the bed.
Could a medication have been swapped?
Lance moved farther out of the way until his shoulder hit the glass wall next to the door.
We have strict dispensing protocols.
The doctor watched the monitors while he talked to Lance.
Medications are checked and double-checked.
Her heart rate is still falling. Someone called out.
We'll try naloxone.
The doctor called out. Lance glanced over his shoulder. On the other side of the glass, two bags of saline lay on a cart, along with other supplies, in the open. Unattended. He stepped forward.
The nurse changed her IV fluid bag 5 minutes before this happened.
The doctor unplugged the IV.
Get a fresh bag of saline. Not one that was sitting in the hallway.
Lance shouted as the nurse bolted for the door. He watched, helpless, as the ICU staff worked. Bodies blocked the view of his mother.
Keep that bag.
Lance called to the nurse, moving the bag off the hook.
It could be evidence.
She set it aside. A nurse administered an injection through the IV line. Naloxone, also known as Narcan, blocked the effects of opioids and reversed an overdose. When he'd been a patrol officer, Lance had carried a dose in his vehicle. Heroin addiction and overdoses had drastically increased over the past decade. Narcan acted fast, sending a true addict into almost immediate withdrawal. If his mother had been given opioids, the antidote would work within minutes. If Lance was wrong, then Narcan would have no impact on her condition, but she would continue to deteriorate, and they would have lost valuable time.
Come on.
Lance's heartbeat echoed in his ears. Sweat dripped down his back, and the fists at his side went clammy. Everything inside him curled up into a tight ball. Waiting. Cold slid over him like a blanket, as if his emotions were preparing for the worst.
Please.
He was so numb, so focused. He didn't see Morgan and Hannah in the hallway. What happened? Morgan grabbed his arm, but he couldn't take his eyes off the heart monitor. Tick tock.
Her heart rate is up, the doctor said. And climbing.
The ICU staff drew a collective breath. In 10 minutes, her pulse and blood pressure had returned to normal levels. Lance let out the air he'd been holding in his lungs. Morgan slipped her arm around his waist. Are you all right?
Yes.
He rubbed his face. It was wet. He dried it with the heels of his hands. Come into the hall. Morgan steered him out of the room. What happened? He explained. I didn't even step out of the room for coffee, Hannah said. The nurses brought me food. No one was in her room except the nurse and doctors, and only the nurse administered medication. Her eyes narrowed. I watched.
It had to be the saline.
Lance dragged in air, his lungs shaky. He felt like he'd lived 3 days in the last 15 minutes.
Tampered with out in the hall. I need to call Stella or Brody. They can pull the hospital surveillance tapes.
He glanced through the glass wall. Nurses and doctors still surrounded his mother. I'll call Brody, Hannah said. Phone in hand, she walked down the hallway. The doctor emerged from the room. She seems to be stable.
How much of a setback will this be for my mother?
Lance asked. She'd already been at risk for organ damage. We can't say just yet. The doctor yanked his gloves off. I don't know how this could have happened. A woman walked by, her hand over her face. Sobbing, she entered the room next to his mother's. The old man.
Did you have a code earlier?
Lance asked. The doctor followed his gaze.
Yes, not long ago, but he'd been sick for a long time. He'd been here for weeks, his death was not a shock. But codes are chaotic,
Lance said.
They are,
the doctor said, turning back toward Jenny.
Excuse me.
He went back into her room and checked her vital signs on the monitors again. Morgan's face went grim. A code would provide a convenient distraction.
They should check the old man for opioids,
Lance said,
in case he was murdered.
Hannah returned. Stella's coming with Brody. They're going to request a police guard for your mother. But the saline had been tampered with before it even entered his mother's room. This killer had murdered by strangulation, hanging, shooting, and poison. He was using whatever method would get the job done. I'm going to call Sharp and tell him what happened. Morgan moved down the hall. Who knew how long it would be before his mother woke up, and if she would be able to identify her poisoner? Lance pushed that thought away. He couldn't deal with the possibility of her sustaining brain damage, not now. Tonight, he had to keep her alive. Brody and Stella arrived and took charge of the investigation. Lance gave them a summary. As he described the events of the night, the numbness retreated like a shadow at noon, leaving anger as bright and clean as winter sunlight in its place. He would find the man who did this. Maybe he was the same man who'd killed Lance's father. Maybe not. But Lance knew that whoever had hurt his mother would have those answers. A patrol officer is bringing up a drug field test kit, Stella said. We'll be able to tell you in a few minutes if the saline was contaminated. Lance paced while the officer arrived and opened his notebook-sized case in the corner of Jenny's room. While the ICU staff attended to Lance's mother, the officer selected a pouch from his kit. He took a small sample of the saline solution. Police officers often needed to test substances for the presence of narcotics. Lance had performed enough field tests in his career. It was far better to identify a random white powder in the field than to arrest someone for possession of crack cocaine when the powder was actually baking soda. In 5 minutes, the officer looked up from his mini chemistry kit.
Positive for opioids.
Jenny had been poisoned.
Twice.
Chapter 39. Morgan watched the scene unfold as Sharp's cell switched over to voicemail. She left a quick message, her attention on Lance, pacing the hallway near his mother's doorway. Confirmation of the poisoning triggered a quick response from both the investigators and Lance. The cops switched into high gear. Tension radiated from Lance like heat from a furnace. His body remained in perpetual motion, as if his emotions were too turbulent for him to keep still. As if he were barely keeping himself in check. He was a man of action. His natural inclination was to funnel fear and sadness into a battle plan. Brody and Stella questioned hospital staff, retrieved the surveillance videos, and called for a forensics team. Morgan's phone buzzed. She pulled it from her purse. Her grandfather's cell number displayed on the screen. A quick burst of nerves scattered her pulse. Grandpa didn't call her without a good reason. Were the girls okay? She stopped at the end of the corridor and answered the call. Is everything all right?
Everything is fine.
He paused. Her spine straightened. Something was wrong. But?
I was reviewing Jenny's emails and phone records today. She doesn't get many calls that aren't from Lance, you, or Sharp, but yesterday, she received a call from a strange number. I thought it might be a telemarketer, but I thought I'd dig. Took me a while to get the caller's identity. Things have changed a bit since I ran investigations. You'll never guess who called Jenny.
Who? Morgan asked.
Stan Adams.
Morgan's mind connected dots.
I thought you'd want to know, right away.
Grandpa said. I do. Morgan told him what had happened to Jenny.
No.
Grandpa swore. A rare event.
I wish I could be more helpful.
You've been very helpful.
Keep me updated.
Grandpa said.
Love you.
Love you back. Morgan ended the call. She caught Lance's gaze. He strode down the hall.
What is it?
That was my grandfather. Morgan swallowed. He reviewed your mother's email and phone records. Someone called her yesterday. Lance's attention sharpened to a knife point.
Who?
Stan Adams. They knew Stan had lied about his whereabouts the night Vic disappeared, but they hadn't had a chance to question him again. Lance turned and headed for the door. Morgan hurried after him. Where are you going? Whatever else happened tonight, she would not let him go off on his own. He was wired.
To talk to Stan.
He said over his shoulder. Stop! She called. Lance turned. We need to tell Stella and Brody. Lance shook his head.
They'll have to pull their own copy of the phone records, but that'll take time. And they're gonna be tied up at this scene all night. It'll be morning before they're free to interview Stan.
You can't cut them out of this.
No, we'll message them the information from the Jeep.
Lance pivoted and strode away. Don't you think we should call the sheriff too? Morgan asked, falling into step with him. Lance pushed out of the ICU.
No, he'll just tell us to stay away from Stan.
Morgan hurried to keep up. He is gonna blow a vein if we don't share this with him. And won't that make working with him in the future fun?
Let him stroke out.
Lance stalked to the elevator and stabbed the button.
We've played by the rules, and where did that get us?
None of that is King's fault. Morgan faced him, putting her hands on his shoulders. This is not a good idea. I know Sheriff King is a pain in the ass, but he's smart, and he's been right behind us every step of this investigation.
If we involve him, he'll put us off the case. Considering King doesn't follow the rule of law, it's totally hypocritical on his part.
Remember the last time we kept the sheriff out of our plans? We almost died. Morgan shivered, thinking about that night in the woods.
Maybe it would be best if you didn't come with me.
His words stung, but she could see the rage pacing through him, as frustrated and pent up as a big cat in a cage. I'm coming with you, Morgan said, afraid he'd leave her behind. God only knew what he'd do without her to temper him. We are a team. Lance met her gaze, his eyes softening for just a second.
Okay.
He jabbed at the elevator button again. What about your mother? She asked. Lance glanced back at the closed door of the ICU.
Brody and Stella are here. More cops are coming. She's as safe as she can be for now. But here's the thing. Brody and Stella and the forensic team will be at the hospital most of the night. The hospital environment will create challenges for the investigation and the collection of forensic evidence. The ICU staff won't allow patient care to be compromised, but as soon as the investigation team leaves, how will anyone protect her? We can't post a lab outside her door and test every drug she needs right before it's administered. Whoever is trying to kill her is smart and flexible. He has no MO. He's killing for self-preservation, and he doesn't care how he gets the job done or how many people become collateral damage along the way. That old man in the next room did nothing, and I am going to bet that he was murdered just to create a diversion so the killer could get to my mother.
The elevator doors opened and Lance stalked inside. Morgan followed him. She briefly considered messaging the sheriff in secret, but loyalty warred with caution. Lance would take it as a betrayal. It would be a betrayal. He was already hurting beyond comprehension. His mother was his only family. How could she ask him to let someone else handle this threat to her life? Lance was right. The sheriff would order them away from Stan, and Sheriff King was hampered by the law, which was the same reason Morgan and Lance had ended up in trouble last time. The entire situation felt too much like deja vu for Morgan's comfort. But this time she would make sure they exercised proper caution. They were both armed, and they weren't alone in the woods in the dark. The elevator descended and the doors opened. "We're only going to talk to Stan," she said as they stepped out.
"Right."
The cold air hit them halfway across the tiled lobby as the door slid open to admit visitors. They passed a young couple. A colorful bunch of Get Well Soon balloons floated behind them. Outside, the night smelled like snow. Morgan buttoned her coat in a rush. They hustled across the parking lot to the Jeep. Morgan plucked the keys from Lance's hand. She didn't trust him behind the wheel, and she wanted some control over their movements. He let her have the keys. Morgan opened the vehicle door and spoke over the roof. "We have to let Sharp know where we're going. Someone needs to keep tabs on us."
"Fair enough."
"And we'll take every other reasonable precaution, one step at a time tonight, okay?" She would ask him to proceed carefully, but she wouldn't demand he walk away. If it was her family at risk, she would be unstoppable too. A defeated sigh hissed from him.
"Okay."
"We're not going to do anything dangerous." But she recognized the words as ridiculous even as they tumbled from her cold lips. "I love you." They were on their way to question a potential killer. Chapter 40. Lance sent messages to Brody and Sharp. "Are you all right?" Morgan reached across the console and offered her hand. He took it. In a world of uncertainty filled with lies and betrayal, what she offered him was pure. He'd been a crazy man to even think about turning away her love.
"She loves me."
When this was all over, he was going to process that. For now, he had to keep swimming forward so he didn't sink.
"No. Yes, I don't know,"
he said honestly. "You look angry."
"I am angry."
His jaw was so tight he could crack walnuts in his molars.
"My father went missing, and everyone was so concerned for themselves they lied to the police and possibly hindered the investigation."
"I know," Morgan said. "But you won't get any information out of Stan if you're too confrontational."
"How about I hold him out a window by his ankles? That might convince him to cooperate."
Morgan squeezed his fingers. "Let's make that plan B. Plan A is to get him to talk without violence. But if Stan had anything to do with his father's disappearance or the attempt to kill his mother..."
"I won't drag you into anything dangerous," he said. "I love your girls too much to risk their mother's life. Call Stan and get him to meet us somewhere public."
A public location would also keep Lance from beating the man into a pulp on the spot. Morgan called Stan's cell. She put him on speakerphone. "Hello, Mr. Adams. Lance Kruger and I have a few follow-up questions for you. Do you have some time this evening?"
"Not really,"
Stan said, his words clipped. Other voices and background activity came over the line.
"The firm is dealing with an issue tonight. Can it wait until morning?"
"I'm sorry," Morgan said. "It's important."
"Fine,"
Stan said.
"But you'll have to come to my office."
He disconnected without saying goodbye. Morgan drove out of the hospital parking lot. Her phone went off, She handed it to Lance. It's a message from Stella. Can you read it?
He entered her passcode and read the message. Stella says, "Where are you?" Do you want to answer?
No. Morgan sighed. You told Brody what my grandfather found. She'll figure out where we're going. A few minutes later, the phone beeped with an incoming call. Lance read the display on Morgan's phone.
It's your sister.
Don't answer it, Morgan said. With her and Brody working your mother's case, she has the power to order us away from Stan. He lowered her phone.
I'm sorry if this will cause tension between you and your sister.
It won't be the first time. Morgan turned left onto the main road. You told Sharp where we're going.
Sent him a detailed message.
As long as someone knows. The accounting firm was located in a 5-story office building, practically a high-rise in this rural community. Lance and Morgan went into the lobby and took the elevator to the 4th floor. The firm was small. 2 senior accountants, 2 juniors, and a handful of administrative staff, but their offices took up the entire 4th floor. Large silver letters spelled out Adams and Booker on the wall opposite the elevator bank. In the boring black and gray reception area, Morgan handed her business card to the middle-aged brunette behind the desk. We're here to see Mr. Adams. Behind the receptionist, harried people bustled. Is he expecting you? The brunette asked. Yes. Morgan smiled. Lance didn't try to copy her. He was not capable of putting on a friendly expression. He hung back and did his best to appear non-threatening. Based on the receptionist's worried side-eye, he wasn't successful. She pointed to a hallway. 2nd door, on the left. Morgan stepped in front of Lance. Her glance back at him was worried, like he was going to do something violent. Lance wouldn't, even though he might like to. He wanted answers. He wanted the man who hurt his mother locked up. He wanted to know what happened to his father. He wanted justice. Stan's office door was open. Lance closed it after he and Morgan were inside. In khaki trousers and a blue button-down, Stan looked like he was headed for the golf course. He glanced up from his computer screen as they walked in. Standing, he extended his hand across the desk. Morgan and Lance shook his hand and sat in the 2 chairs facing his desk. Thank you for seeing us on such short notice. Morgan began.
You said you had some follow-up questions.
Stan rocked back in his chair.
I don't have much time.
I hope it's nothing serious, Morgan said.
No.
He waved off her concern.
Just a last-minute request from a client.
Nice of you all to scramble to accommodate him.
He's one of our biggest clients,
Stan explained.
These things happen.
The small talk was giving Lance heartburn. He leaned forward, his forearms on his knees, 100% of his attention on Stan's face.
My mother overdosed last night.
Oh, no. Stan's head shifted back.
I'm so sorry. Is she... It's still touch and go,
Lance said.
Did you talk to her this week?
Stan's hand dropped to his blotter. He toyed with a paperclip, rolling it around on his fingertips.
I called her yesterday. You didn't stop and see her?
Lance asked. Stan shook his head.
No, I offered, but she said she didn't accept visitors.
That, at least, was true. But how could Lance believe a single word Stan said? He'd already caught him in a lie. Why did you call her? Morgan asked.
After we talked, I felt guilty.
Stan watched the paperclip spin.
I was your dad's friend, and I let him down. I didn't look after his family. I didn't check on you. I didn't make sure your mother was all right. Where were you again that night?
Lance forced the question out of a tight throat.
I already told you I was with Brian at the ball field.
Stan licked his lips. He spun the paperclip in nervous circles. His khakis should have self-combusted. Tension built in Lance's chest, and he quelled the urge to reach across the desk and choke Stan with his own collar. That's interesting. Morgan shifted into her cross-examination tone. Because we know that Brian was lying about that night. He wasn't with you. Stan dropped the paperclip, but he remained silent. Why did you lie to the police? Morgan asked. Stan contemplated her question for a few seconds, his fingers finding the paperclip on the blotter. Was he deciding whether to tell the truth or another carefully phrased lie? How would they ever know? Lance straightened, planting his hands on the armrest, occupying them in case he was overcome with the desire to wring Stan's neck. Thankfully, Morgan was there. She grounded him.
Because Brian asked me to.
Stan admitted, his tone shifted to disgust.
I assume you know where he was.
With Mary Fox. Morgan nodded.
He didn't want Natalie to find out about Mary.
Stan dropped his paperclip, clasped his hands, and rested them on the blotter.
You have to understand. At the time, no crime had been committed. Brian didn't see why he should destroy his marriage for nothing.
My father was nothing?
Lance asked. Stan winced.
I didn't mean your father was nothing. But we didn't think anything bad had happened to him. He'd been under a great deal of pressure. We thought your dad just lost it and went somewhere to decompress for a couple of days. Vic was my good friend.
Not good enough for you and Brian to give the police accurate information,
Lance said. You covered for Brian, so he could cheat on his wife, Morgan pointed out. Stan bowed his head over his clasped hands.
I can't argue with that, but Brian's marriage was his business, not mine. I didn't think it had anything to do with your dad.
And afterward?
Lance's mouth tasted bitter.
When my father never came back.
Stan's shoulders sagged.
Once we'd told the police detective one story, we could hardly change it. I had no idea where Vic was. I only knew where Brian was and who he was with that night. At the time, there were no connections between your dad and Mary.
He lifted his chin and met Lance's eyes.
I'm sorry. Too little too late.
Where were you this afternoon? Morgan asked.
I was here all day.
Stan gestured toward his closed door.
The receptionist can vouch for me.
So where were you the night my father went missing?
Lance asked.
Home, alone.
Stan glanced away for a fraction of a second. Sweat beaded on his upper lip. Liar.
That's the best you can do.
Lance's fingers curled around the armrests. We know why Brian lied, Morgan said. But I seriously doubt you would falsify a statement to the police just so your friend's wife wouldn't find out he was with a hooker. We've already established you're not the most loyal friend. If you lied to the police, you were also up to something that night. Stan's lips mashed flat, as if he wouldn't speak another word.
Did you see Brian and Mary that night?
Lance asked. No answer.
Were you at PJ's?
Lance pressed.
I have nothing else to say.
Stan gestured toward the door.
Please leave. Don't come back.
We won't.
Lance stood.
The next person you'll be talking to is the sheriff.
Lance couldn't wait to sic Sheriff King on Stan. Morgan held him by the arm all the way out the door. Lance didn't remember taking the elevator or walking across the lobby. The next thing he knew, the cold air was slapping him in the face.
He was lying.
Lance headed for his Jeep.
He wasn't home alone.
Probably not. Morgan agreed. What was Stan doing that was worth lying to the police about? And how do we find out where he was 23 years later?
He wasn't married, so he wasn't hiding a woman.
Lance put a hand on the door handle and talked over the roof of the Jeep.
Maybe he was with a married woman.
Maybe. But after all these years, would he still lie about that? Morgan asked. In my mind, he was doing something illegal, something that might still affect his life if the truth came out. Chapter 41. Morgan settled in the driver's seat, the steering wheel freezing under her hands. If Stan has an alibi for today, he couldn't have been at the hospital.
Maybe. Maybe not.
Lance's breath fogged in front of his face like a personal storm cloud.
He's lying about the night my dad disappeared. I've no reason to believe anything else he says.
But he has witnesses for today, Morgan pointed out.
He has employees who will say what he wants them to say. The hospital is a 15-minute drive from here. He could have slipped out and done the deed. With driving time, it would have taken less than an hour. The receptionist must take a lunch break.
I still feel like we're missing something.
Morgan drummed her fingers on the wheel.
Our only suspects are Brian and Stan, yet both had alibis for at least some of the recent murders.
What if they're working together?
Lance asked.
Their original false alibi was joint.
It's possible, but what was their motivation? If Brian killed Mary because she was going to tell his wife, how did Stan get involved?
Brian called him for help, disposing the body,
Lance suggested. It's possible, but I feel like we're still missing a key piece of information. The theory wasn't ringing true to Morgan. It's one thing to cover for your pal, but quite another to help him commit murder.
And it doesn't explain what happened to my father.
Lance closed his eyes and rubbed the bridge of his nose with both hands. Unless Vic saw Brian kill Mary.
And my father wouldn't help them cover it up.
Lance dropped his hands into his lap.
Even though I know Brian and Stan both lied, I still have a hard time believing they would have killed my father.
What do we do? Morgan asked.
We get comfortable.
Lance cracked his neck.
I have no ideas other than good old-fashioned surveillance. Stan is our best lead at this point. I want to stick with him and see where he goes after work.
He glanced at Morgan.
He might be late. Do you want me to take you home?
No. Morgan glanced sideways. Lance seemed to have gotten his temper under control, but she didn't trust him to go off on his own. She reached behind the seat for a tote and pulled it onto her lap. Unzipping it, she dug for the case file and handed it to Lance. Stan drives a black Mercedes. Let's find it in case he goes out the back door. Lance read off the license plate number. Morgan started the engine and turned on the heat. She drove the Jeep up and down the rows until they spotted Stan's car. She parked in the darkest spot she could find several rows away. Turning off the engine, she fished her leftover candy bar from her bag. She tore the wrapper and waved it at him. Want half? He shook his head.
Don't eat that.
Too late. She chewed and swallowed. It has peanuts in it. Nuts are healthy. Lance was always prepared for an impromptu stakeout. He kept his Jeep stocked with emergency supplies. He opened the console and took out two protein bars. From a bag behind his seat, he removed two water bottles and offered her one. She took it but didn't open it. Who knew how long they'd have to wait? After three pregnancies, it was safest to minimize fluid intake on stakeouts of indeterminate length. She fished gloves from her pockets and turned up her collar. He handed her a protein bar, but she put it aside as well. The chocolate would keep her going for a while. It could be a long night. They'd have to ration their supplies. She settled lower in her seat. Lance did the same. Time passed with a creeping slowness that reminded her of Salvador Dali's melting clocks. Just after 11 p.m., Stan exited the building. Morgan perked up. There he is. Hunching his shoulders against the wind, Stan hustled across the parking lot and slid into his Mercedes. The headlights turned on. A minute later, he drove out of the lot. Morgan followed him. With the roads nearly deserted, she eased off the accelerator and stayed well back. When Stan turned into his development, she drove past, then turned around to double back.
Kill the headlights before you make the turn,
Lance said. Exterior lights blazed in the new development, eliminating the need for headlights. Two blocks away, she slid the Jeep to the curb, choosing the darkest place between street lamps. They watched Stan park in his driveway. Lights shone in the front windows of the big house. Stan got out of his car. Closing the door, he stopped and scanned the street. Did he feel them watching him? Stan went into the house. The first floor windows went dark a minute later. Maybe he's going straight to bed, Morgan said. That's what she would do.
It is late,
Lance agreed. Do we continue to watch him? If he was going anywhere else, he wouldn't have driven straight home.
Unless he saw us.
If he saw us, we might as well leave. He won't lead us anywhere if he knows we're watching. Lance shifted in his seat.
Drive around the next block.
Morgan cruised past Stan's house and turned left three times.
Pull over here,
Lance said.
Under that tree.
Morgan parked at the curb around the corner from Stan's house. It's so bright here, I feel exposed. Not only were the lots covered in landscaping lights, but the houses were close together. There were no dark places to hide.
It's the best we can do in this neighborhood,
Lance said.
From a home security perspective, I applaud the lack of dark shadows for burglars to lurk. But for our purposes tonight, it's damn inconvenient.
They climbed out of the Jeep. They locked the vehicle's doors manually and closed their doors as softly as possible.
Hold my hand.
Lance reached toward her. She slid her hand into his. Lance tugged her onto the sidewalk.
We're just a nice couple taking a stroll.
For a minute, that's exactly what she wished they were. The crisp night air chilled her face, but her coat blocked the worst of the cold, and the heat of his body penetrated her thin leather glove. A snow flurry drifted down, slow as a feather, and landed on her arm. If they weren't on a stakeout, their walk would be romantic. Tires crunched on asphalt.
Look casual.
Lance pulled Morgan closer, wrapping his arm around her shoulders. Morgan glanced over her shoulder. Uh-oh. A black and white sheriff's vehicle pulled up to the curb a few feet ahead of them. Sheriff King climbed out of his car, crossed the strip of grass next to the curb, and stepped onto the sidewalk, blocking their way.
What are you doing here?
Taking a walk,
Lance said.
Don't smartass me.
The glare of the street lamp overhead cast the sheriff's face in harsh, angry shadows. Waves of animosity and testosterone shimmered between the two men.
Stan Adams called me to say you have been harassing and stalking him,
the sheriff said. Morgan squeezed Lance's hand. Don't say anything. The sheriff propped his hands on his hips.
Didn't I tell you both to stay away from this case?
Lance said,
My mother is lying in a hospital bed.
Stop talking, Morgan said in a louder voice. The sheriff pointed at Lance.
You should listen to the lawyer.
But Lance's temper had obviously kicked his sense out of the way.
I have every right to protect my family.
You don't have squat.
The sheriff paused after each word for effect. Morgan nudged an elbow in between the men and tried to defuse the situation. We just found out that Stan Adams called Jenny Krueger yesterday. But you knew that, right? You have access to her phone records. The sheriff's lips mashed flat. She couldn't tell if he knew or not. Lance leaned forward as if he was going to speak. Morgan tugged him back. Jenny was poisoned with opioids, she said. Tonight, at the hospital, someone tried to do it again.
Do you have proof of that?
Sheriff King asked. It just happened, Morgan said. Her saline solution was spiked. The Scarlet Falls PD has just begun their investigation.
So you just thought you'd take matters into your own hands?
King asked. Lance shook his head.
And this is why we didn't want to call you. I've had it with you.
The sheriff's fingers stabbed in the air toward Lance.
The only way I'm going to keep you both out of my way is to put you in a cell. You're both under arrest.
You can't be serious.
Lance took a step forward. So did the sheriff.
I don't make jokes.
It was true. The sheriff had no sense of humor. Just do what he says. Morgan gripped Lance's bicep. The muscles were hard and tense under her fingers.
Both of you, hand over your weapons.
King held out an empty hand. They slid their guns from their holsters and offered them butts first. The sheriff took both.
Put your hands on top of your heads. Lace your fingers.
Lance tensed, but he followed instructions.
Now you first, Krueger.
The sheriff crooked a forefinger at Lance.
Give me your coat.
Lance slid out of his leather jacket and handed it over.
You can't arrest us.
I most certainly can. Remember the last time you went off half-cocked?
The sheriff tossed Lance's jacket over the hood of his car.
You almost got yourself and Miss Dane killed. Now turn around.
Lance complied. Pulling Lance's hands down one at a time, Sheriff King snapped handcuffs onto his wrists. He gave Lance a thorough pat-down, emptying the many pockets of Lance's cargoes and piling the contents on top of Lance's jacket. Pocket knife, a fully loaded magazine for his Glock, and a handful of plastic zip ties. The sheriff guided him into the back of the police vehicle.
Now you, counselor.
The sheriff pointed to her,